Hello, welcome to another edition of Unplugged, reflecting on a fine victory last Thursday night. Feels a little while ago now as we get more of a conventional break. We build up towards Essendon, so the old foes continue. It's been an eventful week, reminiscent of the 2020 elimination final where you have a great win but lose three soldiers and left sort of reeling a little bit the next day, thinking, how do we cover that? And always comes with a, I don't know what the opposite of a silver lining is, but that seems to be the way of it of recent times. Opening up by saying valet to Andrew Plimpton, one of our favourite guests on this show and a great servant of the club, passionate saint, was a president during a highly eventful period for St Kilda during financial troubles, a grand final, Tony Lockett's departure, coaching sackings, home ground movements and the like, and guided St Kilda through those troubled waters very, very nicely. And it is very sad to hear of his passing during the week. And I might start there, Nick, as we welcome you. A tremendous win over Collingwood on a Thursday night. I mean, 70,000 at the MCG. It doesn't get much better than that in a home and away sense, and it really gets us rolling. And I guess, unfortunately, though, we've been paying tribute to the dearly departed far too frequently over the last couple of years. It seems like it's, you know, Morrow, Neil, Bonnie, the list goes on, sadly.
There's been a few, hasn't there? It's you know, a lot of these guys that have meant so much to the footy club, you know, are getting to that age now, unfortunately. And so it's, you know, it's time that we get that second one in the cabinet, so that, you know, a few of the older guys who are still around can see that. But going back to the footy, great night on Thursday night. I mean, one of those, it was a really interesting game because being there at the ground, it felt like really scrappy. I mean, it was turnover central for the first half. I think 8 minutes into the first quarter, the turnover count was like 12 to 15. It was something ridiculous. It was super ugly to watch. It was hard. Pressure was obviously very high, but it did feel like both teams made a lot of mistakes. Both teams kept each other in it at different parts, and you know, each team would get a period of momentum and kick a few in a row, and then they'd make a couple of big mistakes and let the other team in, and we certainly did that. Collingwood did it a couple of times. But it was funny watching the game back on replay that it was actually a much more enjoyable game to watch. It was a much better game of footy to watch on TV than it was at the ground. Mm. And I think that, you know, I think we were clearly the better team for the majority of the game, but we did keep opening the door for them and letting them in. And we know that even when they're not playing, you know, amazingly good football, that they're still tough to beat. You know, they're hard, they're contested. They make you win the ball and they make you earn it and all those sorts of things. And they did, they were obviously a little bit off. But, you know, we kept at it. And I think that was the most pleasing thing is, yeah, our contested ball, our attack on the contest, attack at the man, attack at the ball, was all really, really strong. And you know, we turned up, and ultimately, that's all you can ask of a young group. And this is a really, really young group. I think a lot of people can forget that sometimes, but this is a really young group, and they turned up, prepared, and ready to play, and they played their game. You know, we played the game on our terms. Yes, it didn't go our way all night, but we played the game on our terms. We were proactive. We made things happen ourselves, and got the chocolates at the end.
Yeah, H, I thought we, as Nick said, were definitely the better side. We had periods of momentum. We lost our way for probably 15 minutes in the second quarter, and then obviously they got that little flurry midway through the last when we made a couple of mistakes, and it seemed to be a mistake that would spark that. It wasn't necessarily anything else where they just get a bit of a run on after we lost momentum for a second. You know, not putting that on Riley Bonner, for example, but there's a couple that stood out at second quarter and last quarter. Collingwood obviously made some glaring mistakes as well. But, yeah, on the most part, it felt like we controlled the game. And halfway through the last quarter, it looked like we'd win by 8 or 9 goals. So, overall, I think hard to find anybody that played a bad game.
Yeah, it was very much a game of momentum. They go out, what, 3-1, we kick 5, they kick 4 in a row, we kick 4, they kicked, I think they got 1 in, then we kicked another 3, and they kicked another 3. It was a very, very much a momentum night. Patches where one team would take it and then the other would come back. Or, but yeah, you're talking about the clangers and that sort of thing on the night. And yeah, I had a look earlier, and Collingwood on the night 78. But as you say, you look back at the game and you sort of go, it didn't feel like there was that many when you watch it on TV. It didn't like it didn't feel that bad. But the game itself, I just think, made it look a lot better than what it really was, because it was tight, it was high pressure, it was a fast game at times. It was the ball actually pinged around quite a bit at times, and that's what I guess when you look back at just some of the decisions they made at times, that pressure made them make some of those mistakes. How often have you seen their defense punch a ball straight down the throat of an opposition forward in front of goal? Their captain handballs the ball from the back, the goal square, straight to our player. Just mistakes that you sort of go, you don't see them make those mistakes that often. It's a situation where you go, it's great that we took the advantage in those situations, because a lot of time we probably would have stuffed it up ourselves, given it straight back to them or whatever. But we made the most of those opportunities that they gave us and made them pay. And that's how we beat them on the night, by pressuring them and then, yeah, making the most of the opportunities they gave us. I think it was the first 7 goals or something we kicked were from turnovers or something like that. Or
the 7 that they kicked, they were 7 from 7.
So
from
we
turnovers.
Pretty much we yeah. gave them
yep.
that. And I was trying to remember I saw something along the lines of we had a similar amount. Might have been the next sort of batch that in our goal kicking for the night. But yeah, the pressure certainly made or created goals on the night, and that's what obviously hid that whole thing of where the mistakes really were.
Yeah, I mean, for a game like that, I mean, as you say, there were 5 huge clangers, 3 from them and 2 from us. Obviously, Frampton pile driving Higgins over the line in the first quarter, complete brain explosion, and then obviously Bonner with the little chip kick back into the corridor in the second quarter, and then playing on and getting the kick smothered in the last. You remember the glaring turnovers, which were obviously the 3 from them and the 2 from us. But yeah, the standard was very good. Our transition was excellent. I thought Collingwood, clearly they were off a bit, but they looked a bit more like themselves than they had in the first 2 weeks in terms of their setup and structure and their ball movement and their ability to at times squeeze us. So I thought they were a bit better. So therefore, the win is more pleasing for being able to handle that, and also the way we dealt with challenges. I think at halftime we'd given up 4 in a row to then come out and grab the game again. And then by the end of the third quarter, we were strangling them. It was really, really pleasing. I mean, look, last year we were nice and competitive against them. And I think, it probably demonstrates how strong our system is. And this week we have to find that out again, which we'll talk about later, because we're going to have to try to find a way to muscle a victory on system. Obviously losing the pace of Liam Henry and losing Max King, obviously at the time of recording, unsuccessful in his appeal at the tribunal. So that's all that stuff that we'll have to throw up and deal with. But I think also, Nick, it was pleasing for the first time. It's a 4th year we've had the Spuds game. It's the first time we've actually played well. So I think that's worth acknowledging, that we came to the party on that occasion for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, big night, primetime game, standalone game on a Thursday night at the MCG under lights, event game, milestone game, Seb Ross in his 200th. I mean, all these things that we historically have not been very good at. So to do that on the occasion and given the emotion and all those sorts of things was really pleasing. And I think should give this group a lot of confidence moving forward. I mean, I think regardless of whether Collingwood are playing their best footy or not, I think, they're still better than Essendon. And they should go into next week with no fear, thinking that no matter who's in or out, that there's guys that can cover and guys that can come in and next man up and all those things, because we trust in each other, we trust in ourselves, and the coaches trust in the players to execute a game plan, which they've done. successfully against a really good team on their home patch, even though it was our home game. But, you know, big crowd under the lights at the G, and we did the job.
And look, last year, you know, we without Max King for an extended period, we didn't know how long that was going to be, and we were able to put a system together. This is one game effectively where you almost, even if you reinvent the wheel for 1 week and find a way and see what happens. You know, we'll talk about who comes in. It seems the changes are probably obvious given the amount of soldiers going down in terms of what we have. The Mason Wood one, for those who are at the ground versus those watching it on TV, look, it would have been frightening regardless of the situation, but watching it on television, obviously when you see a player convulsing in that situation and you see that they've landed not just on their head but on their neck, you have obviously all sorts of worries around that. And, you know, the emotions of a St Kilda supporter, where you're sitting there going, oh, thankfully he's moving around and it's just a concussion. It's like, oh, no, wait, it's not. It's a broken collarbone, so he's going to miss more weeks. But it was horrible to watch, and I don't know what the perception was at the ground. But, yeah, it certainly put a bit of a hush over things.
Yeah, I was only a few rows back where it pretty much happened right in front of me. And, like, first it was the sound, the two hitting each other. It was a clear just smack between the two players. They hit pretty hard. The fact Cordy got up, you sort of go, he was probably pretty lucky. He's obviously got him, well, if you say it, the better, in the collision. It's, yeah, they hit very hard, and pretty much I was watching that from the time it happened to, I was pretty much looking up at the ball occasionally to see where the ball was, because I was just watching to see what was happening. And yeah, he was not well from the moment he was on the ground, and you saw him just going, like, as you're saying, convulsing. And the first trainers, a few trainers got there, were basically signaling, saying, yeah, come on, we need this out here quick. But yeah, there was, I guess, with a few people looking, going, yeah, there could be some serious damage here at first, because the time and how long it took him to sort of move him in the first instance. So I guess lucky he was probably on his side to begin with, which was a good thing. But just the time between him being on the ground to the first time they sort of rolled him over onto his back to move him, that it was a fair time and gap there. Obviously the cart took its time to get out there as well. That was the other thing. It was I remember it was close to 8-9 minutes, I think, stoppage. There was a lot of care taken. Yeah, a lot of care taken to get him off the field, which is what you obviously want to see. But yeah, it was pretty scary at first. You think, yeah, that did not look good at all. And yeah, I guess if he comes out of it, he's got the broken collarbone, which is what, a 6 week, eight week injury. He would have missed a couple of weeks with how heavy the concussion was anyway. But yeah, just hope he gets himself right and he'll be back by, I was saying, about round 9-10, depending on how well he goes. And yeah, hopefully it's a speedy recovery.
Yeah, it looks like best case scenario is potentially even a month. It says 4 to 6 weeks. So, I mean, we don't get best case scenario very often, but it'd be nice if we could land that. I mean, Liam Henry went from a cramp to half a season, so which sort of the way it seems to go sometimes. We'll put a bow around that with our votes and our awards. We'll be joined by Glenn Elliott, star midfielder for the Saints through the 70s. A little bit later on, best and fairest winner, Simpson medalist for Victoria as well. But all of our votes are pretty similar, which is not surprising, but a very even game. So there would have been a few names that popped up. Reading my own votes again, I realised I left Josh Battle out, which is a significant apology, but gave one vote to Liam Henry, gave us good pace. Mitch Owens was excellent in a number of roles. Jack Higgins, you know, you get the good and the bad with Jack. I thought he was poor the week before, and then you get the match-winning Jack, and I guess that's part and parcel of it. Rowan Marshall, very good, controlled the airways again. Jack Steele, second week in a row, was our best One of our best midfielders. He was probably shaded by Marcus Windhager in the number two this week, who gets the two votes. He was brilliant. That's easily the best game he's played, and the highlights package is looking spectacular. Mm. And then for the second week in a row, I thought Asai Wanganeen-Miller, a BOG, gets the three votes. But, Nick, how did you assess it?
Very similar. I mean, it was a very even performance. I don't think anyone really played a bad game. I mean, you look at some of the bigger name players, and generally, you know, they kind of stood up. You know, Membry kicked multiple goals. Jack Sinclair coming back was probably a little rusty, but you imagine he'll be better for the run. I think he still led everyone for ground covered over the course of the night. I think he was the number one running player for the night. Ryan Burns was very good and probably just missed a vote for mine. But I gave one to Max King. I think he looks fitter, stronger, dangerous. It's a real shame that he's going to miss this week, because felt like he was coming into some consistency through the last period of the preseason. Played pretty well in Geelong, played really well again on Thursday night. So it's a shame that he's going to miss one, but yeah, maybe a guy like him, maybe a week off every now and then is going to do him some good, but he looks fit and strong and healthy and happy and in form. One vote to Josh Battle, who I thought was our best defender. I know Cal Wilkie was also pretty good, but I think Battle did more, I think, coming back the other way as well. Vote to Higgins, who just has the ability to turn a game really quickly. Like you said, Darren, can go missing for large portions. Yeah, often for games at a time, let alone for quarters at a time. But when he's on, and very, very good. Rowan Marshall, as you said, really strong at the contest and helped us dominate at ground level. Yeah, I think he lost the hitouts by a large margin. I think at one stage, yeah, at quarter time, I think it was 1-13 Collingwood's way, and his one hitout came in the last 15 seconds of that first quarter. His ability to win the ball, win a clearance, I think he had 11 or 12 clearances. His stoppage work is phenomenal. He was excellent. Jack Steele, I thought, another good game, and good to see him stringing some good footy together. Marcus Windhager looks fantastic. Super confident, understands his size and his strength and his power and running ability now, which it felt like he hasn't always done that since he came into the league. But he looks super strong and super confident and really, you know, getting better almost weekly at the moment, and just looks like a super player. And Nazaia Wanganeen-Miller was just superb again. And I'm going to maybe have a little take on Naz a little bit later on. But, I mean, he's just an incredible player. Should be well and truly, you know, top of our best and fairest, I think, at this early stage of the season. And, you know, the way he's playing, you could quite easily see him winning a Brownlow, to be honest.
Yeah, at the moment, for sure. And H, keen to get your votes as well. And on Marshall, I think he had the first four clearances of the game, even though he wasn't winning hitouts. So it says a little bit. But your votes, H?
Yeah, so we start with one for Lee Fisher.
first time ever he's looked after us.
There's a construction from Ross Lyon really well, apparently, according to
the band. It was out for us all night, it sounds like. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think he gave us that many compared to the others. When I look back at it, it was quite interesting.
And in fairness, doesn't usually.
No, we don't get any from him at all. Hmm. So, yeah, it was the main takeaway from the very much educated Collingwood fans all around us. So, so as Nick was saying, Josh Battle, I reckon he was the best defender of night as well. Just popped up where he could. I partly filled the role Mason Wood played a little bit last week when you looked at it. Mm. He was the one that was trying to, I guess, get back and jump in that hole and just caused a bit of chaos when they were trying to enter the 50 and just got there where he was needed. One to steal in the middle, great. Again, Mitch Owens, same thing. As I said, he's playing well. I just don't think he's there yet. We could just almost see him just exploding at some point. He's doing a lot, but there's signs that he could just take off all of a sudden. I think we're all waiting for that to happen. Go to Jack Higgins. Wasn't just the goals he kicked. The his work on the ball, around the ground, when we didn't have it, the pressure in the forward line, it was all there that week, last week. He played a fantastic game. He was absolutely everywhere. So, yeah, hopefully we can see that sort of performance more often than not from now on. As I said, he's struggled other weeks, but hopefully those sort of performances, yes, come along a lot more often than what they have. Two to Windhager, just massive in the middle, massive. And that picture of him with Dacos on his backpack after the game was fantastic. And yeah, three to Naz, he's flying, and yeah, I mean, hopefully Mitchie jumps up to, as we're saying, that same sort of level as Naz is at, and those two will take the competition by storm.
Yeah, if we end up with four, I mean, obviously Filippo did a couple of nice things. Not many guys kick left foot snap goals from outside 50, but having Owens, Wanganeen, Miller, Windhager and Filippo, if you end up with four elite kits, obviously you're tracking along pretty well. And yeah, Wilson, three of those guys coming in one draft is a huge bonus for what we're able to do. Take Nass first and then get Windhager and Owens as academy prospects could be a goldmine for us.
Darcy Wilson feels like a steal as well.
Yeah, he does, and shortening a bit in rising star markets as well. In what is a pretty even race. The Jason Blake Award, I stole a bit of thunder on this one last week, so Nick, do you want to go first to avoid that?
Well, I alluded to it a little bit earlier, talking about Naz, and I wanted to give Naz this award this week. I know he's getting a lot of plaudits. I think he's getting a lot of credit. He's playing unbelievable footy. But I think, you know, we all talk about his kicking ability and his disposals and the way that he moves, but I think we probably don't appreciate as much the effort part of his game, the ground he covers, his ability to make up space and fill space in the middle when the ball's there to be won in a contest. His contest work is actually very strong for a guy his size, and his ability to put body on to attack the ball, but also the way that he reads it across halfback and often, you know, popping up for two or three intercept marks a game, floating across the front of packs. I think that his ability goes beyond just his disposal skill and execution, but it's actually the way that he understands the game and attacks the game. And I feel like he's just got it figured out. And as well as his playing, as much credit as he's getting, I think that we probably underestimate and underappreciate what he's doing at the moment as well. So Jason Blake Award for Naz this week.
Good shout, Hage.
I've got to give for someone who was, I guess, underrated before the game and after the game. He had to put up with a 50 game, had been given the much higher plaudits before the game started and half time as well, apparently. And even after the game, it seemed like it just continued on. But yeah, Seb Ross, 200th game. He played a great game. On one of the dozen players I probably should give him an apology to for not giving a vote. He turned up. He provided this really well in the middle. But I mean, you play 200 games, you basically don't get a word in anywhere. And yeah, he probably hasn't been given the plaudits that he deserved this week. And yeah, for a 200th game, it was, yeah, couldn't ask much more of him. So yeah.
Agree entirely. He's been a fine player for us, multiple best and fairest winner. He captained the club for long periods of time when Geary was injured. Yeah, he's been terrific. I know he's had his critics and can understand some of that around ball use, but a very, very good player for our club, Seb Ross, and former guest on this pod as well. But going to give a nom to the sub, Zach Jones. You don't expect the sub to come on halfway through the first quarter, and I thought Zach gave us a lot of link-up work. I thought he ran to some dangerous positions. He got a fair bit of the ball. He made some good decisions and was a really good part of the chain. So I think he should get better from there, but I think he did a really good job, and we really needed him to do that given the circumstances. It's probably a bit harder, H, on the old Shannon Knoll this week, but were you able to scrounge out anything?
Well, if anyone needs the lift, it's our medical team.
Yeah,
let's get all these guys back. Let's get them back as soon as we can. Just, yeah, that's all we ask. Just get as many of them back as we can. 100% fit, soon as possible. I don't think we could ask much more.
Yeah, I think that the closest two to returning are Paddy Dow and Jack Hayes. Obviously, Butler will play this week, you'd think. So, but everyone seems to be a month or more. But, Nick, have you got one for us?
Collingwood fans. Collingwood fans. Yeah. They won a flag 6 months ago, and they're out here crying and whinging because they didn't get a couple of free kicks once. Like, they've had the rub of the green and been kissed on the dick by the umpires for 150 years. And, you know, the one time it goes against them, they whinge and bitch and moan forever on every platform, in person. H, you and I at the cricketers after the game, and those Collingwood fans crying salty, salty tears about having to lose a game to St Kilda and, you know, chanting about 2010 and all these other things. It's like, dude, you won a grand final 6 months ago. Like, what are you complaining about? Like, enjoy it. Just enjoy it.
Yeah, I don't get the mindset. They're a different breed. It's quite incredible. Some of the commentary, even, you know, the criticism of their own side and stuff like that. I mean, yeah, 3 games ago. And, I mean, umpiring didn't make Darcy Moore handball to Brad Hill at the top of the goal square for no apparent reason. And the amount of other, you know, they didn't allow Nash to run unchecked off halfback and get 30 touches and...
Oh, and that Frampton one is just one of the dumbest things I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, and the first goal of the game hit the ground.
Yeah,
so
yeah, exactly.
I don't know what anyway. Mine would probably be, he's been good, and I thought he was still good on Friday, Thursday night, despite the errors. But, yeah, I guess with Riley Bonner, just decision-making, I guess. Some mistakes you get away with, some you don't. He didn't for those two, and I thought Ross handled it very well, saying, you know, a game's 100 minutes, he had a bad 2 minutes, the rest was good, and that's true, but just that decision making and things like that. He's obviously got a third chance at AFL level, second chance at AFL level rather, and really significant for him to just make sure that he, you know, chooses those options wisely, I think, and otherwise doing a pretty good job. We'd run through the injury list, but that would be a segment in its own right. So we'll touch on the clash with Essendon shortly, but we are to be joined by our latest special guest this week, played 139 games for the club. It is Glenn Elliott.